This is Medicaid Leadership Exchange, a podcast where Medicaid directors and other guests get frank about what it's like to steward the nation's largest health insurance program. Through Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, 56 agencies administer a complex web of programs that provide access to essential health services. Listen in as we explore some of the challenges Medicaid leaders navigate and their top priorities to deliver services and build health.
Welcome to this episode of the Medicaid Leadership Exchange. Today, you'll get to know three individuals who have dedicated much of their career to public service in the Medicaid program. Now serving in executive leader positions within their respective state agencies, they bring insight on the rewards and challenges associated with administering a multi-billion dollar program and serving as a trusted resource to each state's Medicaid director. Mark and I are pleased to welcome Dr. Alana Dances, the Chief Medical Officer for the New Mexico Healthcare Authority, Mason Tanaka, the Chief Information Officer for the Alabama Medicaid Agency, and Krista Willing, the Assistant Administrator of Systems, Fiscal, and Operations for Wisconsin's Division of Medicaid Services. And with that, I'll turn it over to my co-host, Mark.
Jamie, thank you. We're very excited to have a conversation with the three of you today. Jamie and I love spending time with people who are passionate about Medicaid and to learn about your experience. And so we're thrilled to get a sense today about what it's like to work as leaders in Medicaid program from your perspective. And maybe to start, we're curious to just hear a little bit about the role that you play, but maybe even more so, how'd you get there? What was your pathway to getting to the role that you play today? Mason, can we start with you?
So the way I started this or got into this career field, I actually started with the United States Air Force. This was many years ago, and I don't want to date myself, but it's been several years ago. I spent 20 years in the Air Force. The entire career was spent in the information technology career field. After that, after I retired, I went into actual private sector. So for the next 12 years, I spent in the information technology private sector working for some companies such as Northrop Grumman and also a small consulting firm that was based out of Cincinnati. To tell the truth, I really had no intention of coming to the state, but there was an opportunity where one of my ex-directors or employees, who was a director under me, came to the state and needed some help with some process improvement efforts that they were trying to do in central IT. So I of course, helped them out, but after the fifth time, coming out there to help him, I said, I'm going to have to start charging you for my time. Of course, I was joking. And then he made the offhand comment, why don't you just join the state? Why don't you join me here? And I think you'll really like what you do. Long story short, I did. About 11 years ago, I came to the state. I started off in central IT for that time period. Spent some time as the deputy secretary and the chief information security officer for the state of Alabama. Coming to Medicaid was kind of a surprise to me in that it was unexpected. A very dear friend of mine who was the CIO, my predecessor, retired and took another job. Took him about 3 months, and this position was still vacant, and he kept bugging me, Mason, I think you'd be a great fit for this job. And I turned him down three times and said, just at least come talk to Commissioner Azar, Stephanie Azar, and see if you can help her, which I did. And again, long story short, she's very convincing and convinced me to take the job, which I had, I was very surprised that I was given the opportunity. Since then, I have not looked back, and I have never regretted taking this particular position, a lot in part due to, again, Commissioner Azar, but also the mission of the Medicaid agency and the good that we do for the citizens of Alabama is very rewarding from a, not just from a professional standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint. So 7.5 years later, here I am, and here I am joining these esteemed colleagues on this podcast. So again, thank you for the opportunity.
Mason, thank you. Krista, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and what was your pathway to Medicaid?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today. I am born and raised Wisconsin girl, have been here my entire life. My dad was a pastor and my mom was a teacher, so grew up very much in a family that was about kind of serving public service and believed in that growing up. Went to the University of Wisconsin, Madison, got my undergrad there in economics, go Badgers, and then actually interned for Senator Herb Cole, who was a U.S. Senator while I was in college. Not where I thought I would be, to be honest. Politics was never really on the radar. Graduated and ended up getting a job working for Governor Doyle and worked, as I like to say, at the very bottom in constituent relations and talking to people about the problems that they were experiencing with the state and working with the different departments, often the Department of Health Services, and trying to help them work through those problems. Worked in the legislature, moved eventually to the Senate Minority Leader and Senate Majority Leader, worked in their offices, and realized while I was doing that, while I enjoyed the politics of it, it wasn't going to be enough for me. And I really needed to find a way to get into kind of policy making. And I saw that really happening more in the agency. So while I was in the legislature, I went back and got my master's degree from the La Follette School of Public Policy and graduated and moved into state government and as an executive budget and policy analyst in our state budget office. So did the Medicaid budget. I was just lucky enough to be given the Medicaid budget as my first assignment and really dove into Medicaid, learning the program and getting that budget through the legislative process. Eventually moved over to Medicaid. So I've been working in the Division of Medicaid for Wisconsin for the last 15 years. Came over and started as the section manager over hospital and HMO rate setting. What a place to jump in. It was hospitals and HMOs are wonderful and, very smart and interesting people to interact with on a daily basis and, you know, pretty intense. And so got thrown a little bit right into the fire and learned a lot through that process and then have really just kind of grown up in Medicaid. As I like to say, I've gone through different positions, becoming the deputy director and then the director over fiscal. And then the last about 5 years, I've been essentially the CFO of the Medicaid program over both kind of all of our financial programs, but then also our IT and operations as well. And so, you know, I think for me, Medicaid just means so much and being able to every day come in and try to make a program that helps the people of Wisconsin better is critical. And what I always say to everybody, if I come in and there's not a point in which I think I can make a difference, then I probably need to find a different job. So that's, I'm here to do that. And I've just really enjoyed the last 15 years doing that.
Krista, thank you. It's interesting. You both have somewhat different paths to how to get there, but maybe similar theme in what keeps you around. Alana, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and how'd you get here?
So I am the chief medical officer of the Medicaid program in New Mexico. Started my career as a registered nurse in 2008. Originally worked in the medical ICU, but very quickly realized that I wanted to be in community settings and I wanted to be working with, populations more than that kind of end of life acute situation. So after being there for a short time, I ended up becoming a home care nurse and a hospice nurse and traveled around West Philadelphia was my neighborhood, seeing patients and kind of seeing what worked and what didn't for the people in my community as far as healthcare went. Started thinking, well, what's next? What do I want to do to have a wider reach? And I ended up going and getting a master's and became a nurse practitioner. And then after that, I became a primary care provider. Again, kind of seeing people, looking at their whole life, looking at their community setting. I saw patients in the clinic, but I also did home-based primary care for people who were frail, had dementia, lived in facilities. So was able to really see how people engage with the healthcare system there. And I did that for 10 years. It was a really good fit for me, but started to get restless thinking, how can I have a larger reach? The places where you see, well, we can't change this. This is how the system works, getting more and more restless with that. During this time, I was lucky enough to have a mentor, which has had a very, very big impact on my career trajectory. He was a physician in my clinic and early on said, I'd like to mentor you. And I didn't really know what that meant at the time, but we started having lunch together once a month. And 10 years later, we still do. And so he was a real advocate for me and an ally. And as I started to advance in my career, I wanted to be the medical director of the clinic that I was in, which had never been done by a nurse practitioner before. And he actually went to bat for me to have the bylaws changed at the hospital so I could have that job. So I took that job over and did that during COVID. So I was doing a lot with kind of emergency management in a leadership setting during COVID. And then he became the secretary of the Human Services Department and said, you know, I really think you should come with me for your next job. And so it was kind of another piece. So I'd been thinking all, you know, public health or politics. I had also was a foster parent at the time. And I had a lot of opinions about like politically what we should do about certain things in the state. So I kind of had been looking for that next step. And this seemed like a really good fit. It was a little bit of policy, a little bit of politics, was still about my clinical background.
You all bring such tremendous experience and expertise to your respective roles and really to today's conversation. So one of the questions that I wanted to pose relates to the challenge of serving as a member of the C-suite, where you're in this role of advising the Medicaid director and really acting as a right hand in many respects, and as a liaison to other leaders within the agency. So I'm just curious, how do you feel those two roles play out day to day in your respective agencies? And what are the biggest challenges in balancing the two roles? And I'll go to you first, Alana.
I think that in a lot of ways, my role is to support the Medicaid director. My role is to make her successful and help her be successful. And that looks like several different things for me. I think sometimes that means going to places in her place when she can't go and speaking on her behalf, which I think is a big pivot from being a clinician, to be honest, you know, that coming from where you're really speaking as yourself and you're trying to just say it as it is, to saying, you know, I'm representing somebody else, I'm representing an agency. So that's part of it. I also think that it means being eyes into the agency, because I'm in that place between, you know, governor appointed and state agency, where you know all the players, you know what's going on. And then somebody might come in who's new and kind of saying like, this is the landscape of the place, to make sure that they're up to date on that. And they have somebody internal who can help them walk through that. I also think that what I bring, like my primary currency, I'd say, in my role is the clinical lens. I know when something might not work on the front line as much. I can kind of strategically say, this is a really important benefit. This really will bring value. And so I think that, you know, behind closed doors, you know, we're in a united front to the world, but behind closed doors saying, oh, this might be something to really lean into. This might be something that's not as important. I also think that I can be largely like the interpreter to provider groups. And sometimes an interpreter just to members, to legislators, like this is what this means for clinical folks. As far as the rest of the leaders in the agency, I think that I'm there to somewhat provide a buffer. There's a lot of stress and pressures and, you know, absorbing what's coming and trying to share that with my team in a way that allows people to still feel motivated and also so we can like get the work done together. I don't feel like it's a particularly big conflict, though. I think that, you know, you're kind of sitting in between two places, but you know, you're one person to the people that you lead up to, and then you have a different role with the people who support you.
Yeah, and really interesting to hear about how your sort of liaison role extends beyond your team members, right? Because of your clinical expertise. Mason, curious to know your perspective.
I want to kind of give you a little bit of a different perspective on that, on that question. One of the things that attracted me to this particular position was that I believe that my boss, Commissioner Azar, saw the value and understood the value of IT and how it is a strategic driver of the Medicaid program and the agenda that they're trying to set forth. That was one of the main things that attracted me. And because of that, and because this position is also a deputy commissioner position, I have a seat at the table, if you will, along with my other fellow deputy commissioners who are running the program, the CFO, of course, and the commissioner. It allows me, when I first came here, let me back up. When I first came here, I could barely spell MMIS. I didn't know a whole lot about Medicaid. I knew about the program, but I didn't know about how it operated. I came from Central IT, of course. But being in that position, having that seat allowed me to better understand the programs. And with IT, you know, the key with IT is a lot of times we tend to think, technologists seem to think that we're kind of at the center of the universe and things revolve around us. Well, it's the other way around, right? We support the business, but we need to better understand the business and the goals of Medicaid and the agency itself so that we can formulate the strategy on how IT can be a strategic driver and kind of get them and facilitate the programs and how we can better serve our members and the citizens of Alabama. So having said that, that has been a benefit. Now, as far as the challenges go, one was the learning curve for me was to better understand the program. And I'm very curious by nature. So trying to understand all the different programs, it takes up a lot of my time, but it's time well spent. Engaging with the other deputy commissioners, that also allowed me to speak kind of their language and to kind of make them better understand the role of IT and how it benefits their program. So it's kind of a challenge, but also a benefit. I'm very fortunate that I have a commissioner that is very trusting and gives me a lot of authority and trust to do the job I need to do. She'll be the first one to say that she is not IT savvy. And so she entrusts a lot of the IT decisions to me. But of course, I always keep her updated. And for those very high level decisions that need to be made, of course, I consult her as well.
That's fantastic. And boy, I will tell you, in my experience, CIOs have the most challenging job in terms of acting as a translator to various team members, just because the technological aspect of your work is complex. And there are all sorts of nuances that I think business partners and programmatic folks may not understand. So can really appreciate the importance of that role too for you within the agency. Krista, I'll turn to you now.
Yeah, I agree with everything that I've heard so far. I think one of the things that I see as most important in my job is just ensuring on a day-to-day basis, the Medicaid director knows kind of what are the important issues that they're going to be encountering perhaps on that day, what are the hot button issues, and how do I ensure that they're not going to walk into a meeting and get blindsided by something, that they feel like they're prepared and ready to kind of tackle what's coming at them, which really means that I need to keep just a good view on what's happening, a good pulse on what's happening from an external stakeholder perspective, who's not happy with us, who is looking for something, who may be reaching out to them on something, and maybe from a legislative perspective, what are we hearing? Do we need to be taking actions in certain places that we aren't? And really trying to put those puzzle pieces together because they have a lot coming at them on any given day. And the more we can do to kind of get that information to them in advance so they feel prepared to walk into that meeting kind of sets us all up for success, right? So they're not responding in a way that they maybe wouldn't have had I given them some information walking into the meeting beforehand. So I think that's really pretty critical. And I've found that in order to do that, we really have to have kind of regular touch bases with our Medicaid director. And over the time that I've been in Medicaid, that has increased. And perhaps that's because of the virtual world we're living in compared to where we were before. But, we touch base with the Medicaid director all throughout the day, whether that's in meetings or it's on Teams messages. We're having this constant kind of back and forth answering questions and making sure we're getting what they need. I find that I'm really a connection point for people in the agency. And part of that is probably just the longevity that I've been in the department. So I end up being that subject matter expert on things that happened 10 years ago that often come back again and again for consideration and can provide some history on, well, this is what happened when we tried this last time. So if we're going to go at it again, let's consider that as we're going into this space so we can just be prepared for what might be coming our way. I find when I talk to people about kind of what are the most important skills that you need to have in this position, I say really good communication skills, right? Every day, that's what you're doing. You're communicating up, you're communicating down, you're communicating out. But you also want to be the person that someone wants to go to solve problems with. So if you're a person that somebody looks at like, oh, they're just difficult to deal with, so I just don't even want to go have this conversation, that's not where you want to be. You want to be somebody that they say, oh, I go to that person, and we always seem to find a way and a path forward. And so, you know, really work in that space to work throughout the department to keep the relationships intact and try to just work through any problems that are coming your way.
I mean, I think that's spot on. I mean, I guess that I'm guessing that like half your role for the three of you is around problem solving. So that I think that really resonates. Mark, do you want to start? I think we have a few questions for each of the guests today. And I think we were going to start with Alana around the CMO role.
Yeah, and maybe there's a common theme to some of the questions we could ask. Part of what I hear in your descriptions is that some of your value is about your technical expertise that you bring. And then some of it is that you're a connector, you're a translator, you are an observer trying to keep people informed, but having to keep your eye across all the different functional areas and things that are going on. And Alana, maybe my version of that for you would be, as a CMO, I assume that you have to navigate what's clinically good practice, what from a clinical perspective is advisable, but you're also managing to keep an eye on, you know, what's cost effective and understanding the budget pressures that a Medicaid program is under. How do you navigate that tension?
I have kind of a few different pieces of that answer. One is that I'm fortunate to work in a state that puts a lot of value in Medicaid. So there is an interest in expanding the program. I mean, not right now, but there has been. There's been quite a lot of expansion of benefits. So, and interest from the legislators, interest from the public, people are pretty well educated on what it does. Usually it's a question of how we're going to do this or which thing are we going to do first more than why do we have to do this at all? So I'm fortunate to be in that situation. That doesn't mean that it doesn't come up. But I think that the way I try to approach things is really to lead with data, which is true in many, many other aspects. But sometimes I think that the clinical data can get lost in the state data or the big scale data. So I try to bring it back to, you know, what do published studies say we should do? What does the national guidelines say we should do? And that it can be really be a North Star a lot of the time, because there is usually a policy about it. And so I think, you know, the place this probably comes up the most is in appeals and fair hearings, and that and clinical criteria for new benefits. You'll find sometimes something will become kind of in vogue in Medicaid. And I might be the person who says, well, I don't really think that this has been proven to be that effective for patients, and I don't know if we should spend our bandwidth on it. And then there's other times I say, you know, we're not really following what the guidelines are as far as the clinical. And that comes up with, you know, appeals too. You're looking at the case and there's exceptions. And so that's, I think, a really important role of mine to say this patient needs this care because I understand this case. And then there are times when we say, well, we don't cover this benefit and we should probably advocate in the legislature to cover this benefit, but we can't cover it today. So there's a little bit of nuance there.
Krista, I wonder, in your world, you have all sorts of pressures around finances and systems, and I would imagine there are places where people have policy goals, strategic goals that they want to accomplish, and you at times have to be the one to say, well, I don't know, I'm not sure. How do you balance the tension between sort of the technical realm of your work and the helping everybody achieve success?
Yeah, it's a really good question and something I balance every day because I think in the world that we're living in with the fiscal pressures that we're seeing now that we haven't seen over the last 5 years because we've had more federal funding into the system, it's more of a pressure that we're feeling now. I think the first thing that I try to tackle is just making sure people are understanding the information that we're putting in front of them. And in order to do that, I try to understand what's important for them to understand and what do they want to be a part of in terms of this decision-making process, right? So we take extremely complex information and we try to break it down to very simple terms that the average person can understand because, you know, not everybody has a degree in Medicaid. I'm kidding. That doesn't exist. There's no degree in Medicaid. Every Medicaid program's different. And so anybody coming in from usually, if we're talking about a Medicaid director, or anybody who's appointed above a Medicaid director is usually starting from a point that they don't have that history or the kind of knowledge base. So we break it down to simple terms. And then we try to figure out what they need to understand in order to make the decision and make sure that we're providing that information to them. So there's the technical part. This is how much it's going to cost. This is what that's going to mean. This is when we can do it. Then there's the, and here's what the outcome would be. Here's what the external stakeholders are going to think. Here's what you're going to hear from the political side of the spectrum. Here's what it'll mean to our members if we do this. And here's what it will mean to our members if we don't do this. And really trying to tell the whole story and narrative about what this means while still focusing on things like, and we could do this, but it's going to cost us $10 million. And here's where our budget is. And really, it's putting it in perspective with all the information for them so they can make the decision. And then I think what's really critical in my perspective, and I've had 8 different Medicaid directors since I've been here, and I think this has been true for each and every one of them, is it's my job to tell them honestly what I think. And that doesn't mean that they have to agree with me and they have to move forward with that direction. But if I'm not telling them what I think, because I don't think that that's what they're going to think, then I'm doing them a disservice because that's my job, is to give them my honest opinion. And every single Medicaid director that has come in has really honored that and said, I appreciate you being in this space, giving me your honest opinion. And then at the end of the day, if they say, Krista, thank you for that. I disagree. We're going in this direction. My job is to take it in that direction and get it done because they're leading the program and I'm going to help them get where they want to go. So I think there's a tension there, but there's an appropriate tension there because it helps us balance both the fiscal need and the policy need of the program.
Mason, I'm assuming that resonates for you. A lot of folks in Medicaid probably don't really technically understand a lot of the world that you're really smart in. How do you navigate and how do you see yourself being successful within that tension between your technical work and supporting success?
So very similar to Krista, except for making them understand the program ramifications. It's how do I make them understand why we need this IT system or why I need to refresh my servers? And trying to, especially with the CFO and the commissioner, we get a lot of mandates from CMS, right? We all do. And fortunately, having that seat at the table, I'm right there where I can interpret these final rules, these SMDLs, or whatever guidance that comes down from CMS, and to identify and try to make them understand what are the ramifications, what are the changes required from an IT system standpoint. Under my department, I own the MMIS, I own the eligibility system, I own our health information exchange, I own our EDV system. And on top of that, CMS has mandated us to take our MMIS and modularize it and modernize it. It is a huge investment, not just in federal dollars, but in state dollars, and trying to make the commissioner and our CFO understand why we needed to do this, I kind of had to take a different approach where I don't see this major effort as an IT replacement effort. It's really a business transformation effort in that it's an opportunity for us at the Alabama Medicaid Agency to kind of revisit our business processes and to revisit that, look at our business processes. IT can get very stale in a lot of states that have been on their MMIS system for many, many years. A lot of times with very old IT systems, business processes can get stale. And a lot of times the reverse happens to where the programs get held hostage by the limitations of the IT systems. And so making them understand that with newer technology, looking at their business processes, Applying some, the old Lean Six Sigma, Kanban events, those kinds of things, where we're looking at business process opportunities and find out where IT can support those improved business opportunities. That I think resonated well with them.
Well, we're about to wrap up, and I just really want to thank you, Mason, Alana, and Krista for joining us today. I think this was a fantastic conversation and will be really valuable to leaders in Medicaid programs throughout the country. And this is just the kind of insight that I think is helpful, in particular for emerging leaders who are thinking about their career trajectory and their interest in moving into an executive level position within a Medicaid program. Mark, I'll turn it over to you to offer some closing remarks.
We often hear the story that nobody really sat there in junior high school and thought, oh, I'm going to grow up to be working in a Medicaid program. You know, stories today reinforce that people come to this work in a lot of different ways. And in this case, the technical knowledge, really important. And yet, going back to your first descriptions of how you got into the work, that connection to the impact that you can have in these roles seems really strong. And I really appreciate the thoughtfulness that you share about how to help make really complex issues straightforward for folks to help inform decisions that serve members in your state. I mean, that really came through to me. And so we appreciate the chance to share your experiences with others out in the field who might be thinking about how do they contribute to a Medicaid program and its success. And we're grateful to just spend some time today and hear about your work.
Yeah, and I think it was really evident throughout our conversation how the passion you have for the program really drives the work that you do, even in terms of embracing challenge. I just felt like that was the through line from our conversation today. Well, to those that are listening in, I want to thank you for joining us today. Please stay tuned for future episodes of the Medicaid Leadership Exchange, and we look forward to having you join us once again.
This podcast is a collaboration between the Center for Healthcare Strategies and the National Association of Medicaid Directors. It is made possible by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.